There were 9 temples of Lord Vishnu at Nayatripati on the bank of the river Tamraparni. And after bathing in the river, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the deities with great curiosity, then wandered on. Purport. The 9 Vishnu temples known as Nayatripati, Navatirupati, are situated in and around Alvar Thirungarai, This is a town about 17 miles southeast of Tirunelveli. All the deities of the temples assembled together during a yearly festival in the town. So different manifestations of Krishna joined together for a festival. Now, is Ujeshwari here? No. This is just a suggestion if she's listening at home. Rather than give a speaker one verse with very little purport and very little comprehension of, you know, anything about it, other than that it's whatever it states, if since this class is only held twice, I think, what is it, twice, Saturday and Sunday, then give the person speaking a series of verses so that he has something to talk about from the book itself. And then the other speaker also can have another section of verses, and you'll get a lot more covered and a lot, you know, more usefully. You hear more of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think that's the point, rather than one verse about one place. Now, here's a question. How is it that everybody, how does anybody know? Lord Chaitanya was on pilgrimage. Does anybody know for how long he was on pilgrimage?
2 years.
6 years. He was on pilgrimage for 6 years. Now, he was coming and going from Jagannath Puri, but his pilgrimage time was basically 6 years, and he covered most of India, especially South India. And if you think about it, a six-year pilgrimage. I mean, we talk about having pilgrimages for a few months, maybe, or weeks. Weeks, yeah. And this is a pilgrimage that went on for 6 years. This was a very amazing... Now, how did we know what he did? Because he was traveling many times alone. So how do we know what he did and what he saw? Does anyone know? When he came back to Puri, everyone wanted to know exactly where he'd been and what he'd seen. So that's how they know. That's how they know, because he explained it in detail, because the devotees were so curious. I mean, 6 years, he was on the go, so to speak. I don't know, that's maybe not such a respectful way to refer to Lord Chaitanya. I mean, I don't mean it disrespectfully. But he was on the go for 6 years to all these holy places, you know, and probably thousands of miles of travel. And so when he finally came back to Puri, he explained in detail everything he'd seen and everything he'd done. So that's how we know. Now, someone could question, well, why should we believe Lord Chaitanya? Well, we have a lot of evidence that Lord Chaitanya is God. So if God expresses something from his memory, that's significant. He went to so many, he met so many amazing personalities. So what I'm going to do initially, I want to explain myself. I'm going to sort of give a little summary of what happened during those 6 years. It'll be a brief summary. And then I'm going to use part of that summary to segue into a discussion about worshipping the guru, especially the Paramahansa gurus in our line. And that is the testimony of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur about his spiritual master, Gorkishore. I think many of you may not have seen this before, and that's what's going to be put up on the screen so you can all see what he had to say. That's a little later. So right now, I'm going to go back to my summary. 6 years of travel. It's hard to even imagine, at least for me, to be on a pilgrimage for 6 years. But he did it, and he did it joyfully. How did this come about? Well, Advaita Acharya, as many of you know, tricked Lord Chaitanya when he was trying to go to Vrindavan. Nityananda and Advaita Acharya tricked him. Nityananda tricked him by making him think that he was coming to the Ganges, or the Jamuna. It was actually the Ganges. But Advaita Acharya was there, prearranged, in a boat, and took Lord Chaitanya to his place, Shantipur. And so it was a trick, but Lord Chaitanya accepted it. They went there, and then all the devotees from Mayapur came, all his associates, including his mother. There's no mention of his wife, which wouldn't have been appropriate, apparently, at that time, since he'd taken sannyas. But his mother was there, and there was a discussion about how Lord Chaitanya could satisfy the social etiquette of a sannyasi not living with his family members, and at the same time satisfy his mother and the other devotees with a place that was acceptable to all of them. So Sachimata came up with the idea, he let him go to Jagannath Puri. She said that will be acceptable. And that sometimes they would go to see him, and sometimes he would come to see them. So that was the arrangement. Then there was tremendous festivals and feasting for days. And then he was going to leave. And Advaita Acharya put in a plea. He said, no, just two more days. And it says that he would never disobey anything Advaita Acharya asked him to do. So he said, okay, two more days. So they had another 2 days of feasting and chanting and dancing and, you know, wonderful festivals. And then he was about to go. Then Haridas Thakur stepped up and said, how am I going to go to Jagannath Puri? I can't go there. I can't go into the temple. How will I live without your company? So Lord Chaitanya said, you're breaking my heart with all this humility. I'll take care of you. Come there, I'll take care of everything. So that was Haridas Thakur's plea. Then Lord Chaitanya just got up and left. And there's a description that everybody began wailing and crying. And Advaita Acharya was following him. He was also wailing. And finally, Lord Chaitanya turned around to him and said, now look, if you carry on like this, how will I be able to do what I'm supposed to do? You go back now, and you get engage everyone in chanting and dancing and taking prasadam. This is our process. I'm paraphrasing. These were not the exact words. So Advaita Acharya did that. And it says that Lord Chaitanya left, and he used a word to describe his mood. It's called nirapeksha. Anyone know what nirapeksha means? It has several meanings, yeah? Did you have your hand up? No, no. That's better, yes, not to favor anyone. Actually, in English, it's indifference. Or sometimes it's described as neutrality. In other words, to be a preacher, Prabhupada explains in the purport, to be a preacher, you have to be, you can't be too tied into situations in an emotional way. You have to be able to be neutral, you have to be detached. But nirapeksha is a word that's actually very hard to translate into English, but basically it means he could leave and remain unaffected by all the sentiment and all the moaning and crying. He had to do it. How could you be a preacher otherwise? So he did depart. And he traveled extensively. But initially, of course, we know that he was headed to Jagannath Puri. And his journey is described in very detailed way in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. I don't know if any of you got. There's several copies. I know Sarva Bhavana did one, and there's one by Bhumipati and what is that other devotee's name? No, nobody remembers. I don't remember either. I should, because he was did the English and Bhumipati did the translation. But anyway, very extensively. Then on the journey, this a very significant incident, and which will lead eventually to this, what we're going to show on the screen. Lord Chaitanya had his danda. He'd taken sannyas. He was traveling with his danda. And at one point, Nityananda got hold of this danda and broke it into three pieces. And at least he claims he threw it into the river. And Lord Chaitanya was quite upset. And Nityananda Prabhu was thinking, what is the point of Lord Chaitanya carrying a danda? He's a Paramahansa. He doesn't need a danda. And that has been the tradition, that Paramahansas do not have to carry a danda anymore. So he said he's already a Paramahansa. But Lord Chaitanya's mood was different. He was thinking, no, I need to set an example by always carrying this danda to take a more humble position. Well, this was a big point in Bhaktisiddhanta's taking sannyas. Why did he take sannyas? Since by that time, everybody was becoming a babaji. You would accept vesh, or the cloth of a renunciate, and become a babaji. But there were so many fake babajis. In fact, this is one of the things that Gaur Kishore was furious about. And you would, again and again, find these people, or identify these people who are faking spiritual life, who are faking an elevated state of Krishna consciousness, and exposing them. Very ruthless in that regard. He didn't like hypocrisy. He didn't like pretense. He was like a thunderbolt, anyone who had come in a pretentious manner to see him. Anyway, so let me just basically go through. So it was Nityananda that was no danda needed. He's a Paramahansa. And Lord Chaitanya, no, I want to set a good example for others. And to place myself on the level of a Paramahansa, no, I don't want to do that. And Bhaktisiddhanta was in that mood. He wanted to take a position below his spiritual master and his father. Those are his gurus. He wanted to be in a lower position. So anyway, the travels. Well, first person he met up with and had an incredible experience with was in Puri, was who? First person that he had a real interaction with. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he entered the temple of Jagannath, he fainted. And the people thought he was dead. You know, both Haridas Thakur and even Christ, they say, entered a deep trance, and people thought they were had passed away. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very experienced, so he took a cotton swab and held it underneath Lord Chaitanya's nose, a slight motion, so he knew he was still alive, but just in a deep trance. So they had a whole exchange where he liberated Sarvabhauma from all of his... He had been teaching so many sannyasis Vedanta, and... So then he became a total Vaishnava. He had been an impersonalist. So these are some of the personalities that in his journey Lord Chaitanya ran into. Venkata Bhatta, Paramananda Puri, Lord Shiva and his consort. Now how do we know? As I said, this is all told by Lord Chaitanya when he got back to Jagannath Puri. He met Lord Shiva. He met Parashuram, the avatar of Parashuram. He saved Kali Krishna Das from the Bhattaharis, who were kind of a black arts, I think some people called them witches. I don't know whether they were witches or just shaktas of some kind, but they were powerful, and they'd captured his person that was traveling with him, Kali Krishna Das, and he had to rescue him personally. Then he met this Brahmana who was a devotee of Lord Ram, but couldn't even cook properly for Lord Chaitanya because he was in so much grief about the fact that Ravana had touched and taken away Sita. So then in his travels, Lord Chaitanya found a copy of the Korma Purana, where it explains that that was an illusory sita. It wasn't the real sita that he was able to get his hands on. It wasn't sita at all. It was the illusory sita. He also met the Tattvavadis, who purported to be followers of Madhvacharya, but they preached a kind of lame philosophy, in Lord Chaitanya's opinion. They were saying the real point of life was to follow the Varnashram system and in that way become liberated. And Lord Chaitanya said, why are you talking like this? Then he quoted the verse from the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. Do you know what it was? Come on. Everybody knows this verse? Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. He was saying, this is the point. This is what you should have said. And then the leader of this Tattvavadi said, yeah, you're right. So he didn't have so much respect for those particular followers of Madhva. He had all respect for Madhva, but he didn't have much respect for the teachings of these Tattvavadis. In his journeys, he also met Shankara, you know, Lord Shiva, and Shankaracharya, the great impersonalist. He also met Madhva. He met so many people. He discovered two important books. Anybody know what they are? Very important books. Brahma Samhita and? Yeah, Krishna Karnamrita. He said these are two valuable gems. And he brought them. He brought them actually to Ramananda Roy. And Ramananda Roy was so impressed by them, he made copies as soon as he brought them. He had managed to get the manuscripts from someone who in his travels and ask if he could have them. And they gave him those copies. And then Ramananda Roy made copies. So these are just some of the adventures of Lord Chaitanya in his travels. Now, this is 6 years, and this is, it's much more extensively described, of course. I'm just trying to summarize, but just to give an idea of the scope of Lord Chaitanya's movement through India. Anyway, back to the breaking of the danda. The whole controversy came to be in the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya. One of the controversies was that you weren't supposed to take, it was not so common to take sannyas. A few people did, but mainly they took this Babaji Vesh, the dress of a Babaji, but then it became like a hoax after a while. Well, so many people were taking, well, I don't know if you could say take sannyas, or you could say become a Babaji, however you want to put it. Lots of people were becoming Babajis just by putting on a certain kind of cloth and putting on a great show of renunciation, which usually didn't last, and they were doing all kinds of things in secret. So now I want to start the next part. What you're about to see is, can everyone see that? Where you are? In this case, should we tilt it a little bit in this direction? I don't know. What do you think? Can we do that, or is it too difficult? I'll explain it. Can anyone see? Can you see from over there? Govinda? Yeah, just about. Well, it's a little hard. Is it? Okay. Well, this first thing that you've put up on the screen is kind of my introduction to Bhaktisiddhanta's, it's a collection of Bhaktisiddhanta's remarks about his relationship with his spiritual master, Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Now, it was Gaurakishore that was, you could say, unmasking or exposing all the fake renunciates. I mean, anyone who was brave enough to come before him without a sincere practice of Krishna consciousness, he would just either dismiss, give them some severe instruction, There's one story I'll tell before we start. There's one funny story. Lord Gorkeshwar, once someone came before him and he gave him, as we used to say in the old days, gave him the sauce, you know, kind of was very critical of him. And the man was so upset, and he left, and he didn't come back for a long time. So then one day he reappeared, and Gorkeshwar Das Babaji Maharaj said, "Where have you been?" He said, "Well, I didn't think it was appropriate to hear the cutting words of a sadhu." And Gorkeshwar began to laugh. And he said, "You know, you're a family man, and you and your whole life you're getting so much criticism for all your different family members. You'll never leave their company. But if a saintly person just says one critical thing to you, you're ready to renounce him forever." So he just thought that was hilarious. So, you know, sometimes his sense of humor, people didn't always follow it. But anyway, so this is I'm coming out with a book soon called Babaji Maharaj. It's a revision of the original one. And this is just an introduction. So I'll read it and then you can see it and we'll maybe discuss it. Not so much this, but what comes. In his preaching, Srila Gorkeshwar Das Babaji always spoke out against those who were cheating in the name of reclusive chanting. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, upon the order and approval of his gurus, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gorkeshwar Das Babaji Maharaj, spent some years performing such secluded bhajan. I don't know, some of you may know this, some of you may not, that Bhaktisiddhanta followed Haridas Thakur's practice of 3 lakhs of rounds a day, every day, for 9 years, so that he could chant, I think it was 1 billion names. So that's quite an achievement. But he did not recommend it for his followers. In fact, he emphasized sannyas, situating himself within the parameters of Varnashram so as to offer special respect to such paramahansas as Rupa Goswami and the Rupanuga Goswamis, including his father and his guru. To demonstrate how exalted and rare such perfect devotion and purity are, as well as how lofty the qualifications must be for those who want to follow in the footsteps of such liberated souls. Okay, the next one. It hasn't happened yet. Or is it? Oh, it has. Sorry. I'm a little slow. You're a young man. You have to forgive me. Would you like to read this first one? Now, not too fast.
I have been busy within this material world trying to bring sense gratification within the grasp of my hand. I have often thought that by obtaining the objects of sense gratification, all my shortcomings will be fulfilled. I often attained different facets that were very rare indeed, but my own personal shortcomings were never mitigated. In this material world, I have had the association of very aristocratic persons. However, seeing their various deficiencies, I could not offer them praise. The most merciful Supreme Lord, Sri Gaurasundar, seeing me in such a lamentable condition at a time of adversity, gave permission to his two dearmost devotees, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gorkeshwar Das Babaji Maharaj, to grant their blessings to me.
Now, just so that no one misunderstands, and it would be possible to misunderstand, Bhaktisiddhanta, whenever he spoke of himself, it was in highly critical terms. You know, we see him as a paramahansa, a great, great devotee, and as far the way he saw himself, this is the way he saw himself, that he was a floundering person who couldn't understand much. So, go to the next. So these are his words. Maybe we can get another reader. Hari Priya, can you see that? Can you read it? Yeah, it's good. Keep the mic going now.
Because I was always intoxicated with a worldly false ego and the desire for name and fame, I deprived myself of my own real benefit. But because of the influence of my previous birth's activities in devotional service, I came into the association of Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur, who is my spiritual well-wisher. My spiritual master, Srila Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, would go and visit Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur and many times would reside with him. Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur, out of his compassion for other living entities, pointed out my spiritual master, Srila Gaur Kishordas Babaji. Upon seeing my spiritual master, the extent of my worldly false ego diminished. I knew that all the other living entities who have taken the human form of life were also fallen and low like myself. But by gradually observing the spiritual character of my master, I realized that only a Vaishnava could reside in this material world and be of exemplary character.
Yeah, thank you. So this is his mood. This is very much his mood and his actual feeling. He's not faking anything. He's not trying. You know, and sometimes in our movement, we sometimes we say, oh, you know, I'm so fallen. You know, you're so great. And we go on with all this rubbish talk. I'm sorry, but most of the time it's rubbish. We're all fallen. So, but he actually felt this. This is what he actually felt. And he thought that bhakti yoga or bhakti was a very nice idea, but not practical. It's not able to be practiced until he met Gaur Kishore. So go to the next. Let's see, who would like to read? You'd like to read. Will you give him the...
When out of false ego, I was thinking, I'm a great scholar of mathematics and philosophy. Let any big pundit come at any time, day or night, and I will cut his propositions to pieces. At that time, I got the darshan of the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev. He ignored everything that was previously appreciated in me, my truthfulness, my moral and pious life, and my intellectualism, knowing them to be of little value. When I saw that he ignored whatever was good in me, I realized how good he himself must be, who could neglect so many good qualities in me. What inconceivable wealth he possessed.
Sorry. It's... I mean, the fact is that he was an amazing scholar and pundit, Bhaktisiddhanta. Incredible. You know, he's joking about his ability, but it's true. He met with so many scholars and completely diminished them to the point there was one famous astronomer that he debated with so fiercely that this person lost control of his... anyway, I won't go in. Lost control of himself, let's put it that way. And he says, I will cut their propositions to pieces. He's saying this was his mood. Just give me anybody that has a stupid philosophy or a foolish idea and I will cut it to pieces. And then when he came up against Gaur Kishore, he says, Gaur Kishore looked at him as, you know, with his truthfulness, his moral and pious life and his intellectualism, like, that's too bad. It's just like sometimes, I remember we used to meet, you know, sometimes, and don't take offense, but sometimes Indian people introduce somebody, this person is a doctor. I don't know, like, what you're supposed to do when they say, what you're supposed to do when they say that, you're supposed to pay obeisances or what? But I remember one time we came up with a good remark, so-and-so is a doctor. I was like, oh, that's too bad. That's too bad. Meaning that it's also an opportunity to become a little arrogant, you know, sometimes. So anyway, he was saying he ignored whatever was good in me. And he didn't see them as assets. Okay. I know I'm kind of going through these, and if anybody has questions about a particular one, we can always go back to it, but I want to cover them all. There's not that many. On this side, another reader. Lady, one of the ladies, please. There's one. I know her. Give her the microphone. A little louder.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Being neglected by him, I understood that there was no one more fallen and contemptible than myself. That was my actual identity. The very things that I had judged what is that word?
Desiderata. There's the footnote at the bottom. I'll read it to you. Okay. It says, something that is needed or wanted. Okay. Desiderata.
The very things that I adjudged desiderata, such as scholarship and upright character, this exalted soul regarded as valueless. I apprehended that within himself this noble personality possessed priceless treasure. I then pondered that either he is extremely puffed up or is exceedingly merciful. I then haughtily said to my Gurudev, you are a worshipper of that cheetah and debauch Krishna, so why would you be compassionate to someone like me, dedicated to ordinary morality?
Well, now, Bhaktisiddhanta here is actually being satirical about his own attitude by saying this. You know, I'm just dedicated to ordinary morality, which he'd always thought was a really good thing to be. And here, but you worship this Krishna who's a debauch and a cheater. Way many people at that time did see him. But this is not be taken literally. It's sarcasm. And there's a little footnote at the bottom that says, you both, meaning Gaurakishore and Bhakti Vinod, are worshippers of the crest jewel of debauchees, Krishna, which is a funny way to describe Krishna, but, you know, that's sometimes, it's again, it's a kind of sarcasm. Therefore, why will you take mercy upon someone devoted to morality like me? And then he recited lines from a song from Sharanagati by his father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Karuna Naile Kandya. Kandya, boy, pranana rakibawar. If you are not merciful to me, then I will constantly weep and weep, no longer being able to maintain my life. So this is a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay, next one. On this side now, any other volunteers? Okay, we have another volunteer here.
Humbly and sincerely, I prayed to the Supreme Lord for his mercy. Later, by his grace, I recognized that without receiving the blessings of this peerless saint and without serving him, nothing good could happen to me. When I accepted that and acted accordingly, and then received the causeless, unlimited grace of my Sri Gurudev, and refuge at his lotus feet, I deem my life fulfilled.
So there's a little footnote here. I'll read it. Actually, I can read it from here. If I can get to the page. When Saraswati Thakur first approached Babaji Maharaj for initiation, he replied, then this is what Gaurakishore said. Gaurakishore replied, I once accepted a disciple, but he cheated me and went away. I will not make any further disciples. So he refused him a number of times. Bhaktisiddhanta was just pleading with him to give him initiation. And he said, "Nah, you're a great scholar. What do you need initiation from me for? You know, why? And I'll ask." Then he finally said, "Well, I'll ask Krishna. I'll ask the Lord." And then Bhaktisiddhanta came again. So what did he say? And he said, I asked, but he did not give me the go-ahead, so to speak. So then he was practically disconsolate, and he quoted this song that we referenced earlier by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he finally did accept him. But anyway, let's go on to the next one. This is good too. I love all of these anyway. Who's got the? Where's the mic? Okay, can you give it to one of the ladies on the other side? Anybody? Any of you? There's a few. Yeah. Go ahead.
I had considered my guru to be unequaled in Vairagya, but somewhat short of learning. But he reduced my power, my
audacity.
To powder. Sorry. But he reduced to powder. Sorry. My audacity, born of book learning. When the mallet of his mercy...
Everyone know what a mallet is?
Hammer?
Like a kind of hammer, yeah. They're often made of wood, but it's like a something for pounding something. Anyway, he reduced... I'm sorry, go ahead.
With the mallet of his mercy, he revealed that whatever I had adjudged to be the highest idea was, in fact... most low and
despicable.
When by his grace that instruction first entered my ears, my diminutive brain lacked the capacity to accommodate such transcendental knowledge, But to all fools like me, he gave the chance to hear such lofty topics.
Okay. So again, you know, sometimes you could think, hearing all this, remember too, Gorkha Shortis Babaji Maharaj was illiterate, more or less illiterate. He carried some songbooks by Narottam Das Thakur and others, but he didn't really read or write very well. Yet anybody had asked him a fairly sophisticated philosophical question, he immediately would answer. Because he was a realized soul. He could understand very deeply. And he used to listen to all the talks given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was his great good friend. So next. Okay, it's this side again. Okay, volunteers. Govinda, you raised your hand. No? Okay, somebody else. Yeah, go ahead. Can you pass that over? Yeah. I'm trying to engage everybody. Okay.
It was by providential dispensation that I was able fully to understand the language and practical side of devotion after I had met the practicing master, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. No education could have prepared me for the good fortune of understanding my master's attitude. Before I met him, my impression was that the writings of the devotional school could not be fully realized in a practical life in this world. My study of my master and then the study of the books, along with the explanations by Thakur Bhaktivinoda, gave me ample facility to advance towards true spiritual life. Before I met my master, I had not written anything about real religion up to that time. My idea of religion was confined to books and to a strict ethical life. But that sort of life was found imperfect unless I came in touch with the practical side of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Go on. And again, I'm trying to have equal representation here. Can you pass it over there towards the back? These are some important ones, I think. They're all important, but... can't hear.
I have understood that if the people of this world do not receive the same jolt that I received from my Gurudev, then their consciousness will not awaken. Therefore, I am telling everyone, I am more foolish than anyone else on earth. Please, all of you, do not be foolish like me. Do not live your life within the limitations of calculating consciousness. Discuss Vaikuntha Katha, and you will become a great person. I am telling you what I have realized to be supremely beneficial.
So this is so nice. He's saying that unless you sincerely approach the spiritual master and get the, you could say, jolt or the infusion of what he's tasting, then your conscious, your Krishna consciousness will not fully awaken. And he claims to be foolish about, you know, having calculating consciousness means that you're always looking for the angle or looking for something that will benefit you or looking for some advantage. But he's saying, no, don't think like that. Just discuss Krishna Katha or Vaikuntha Katha and you'll become a great person, he says. I'm telling you what I have realized to be supremely beneficial. Such a deep instruction. Okay, we'll go on next. Okay, back over here.
On receiving a jerk of the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev.
Can you start again? Start again.
On receiving a jerk of the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev, for the span of 1 year, I lost all sense of this external cosmos. I do not know whether any transcendental agent equal to him has ever appeared in this plane. How may those who are preoccupied with worldly lust, anger, and so on, ever know him?
Now just imagine, this is one of the greatest scholars of all time. You know, we have Jiva Goswami, of course, as one of the, recognized even by the Mayavadis as a great scholar. And here he's saying, look how he, what his attitude towards the spiritual masters is. I mean, there's even people who have debated whether or not he was actually initiated by Gorkhasur. And yet, this is how he's speaking of him. So this was his mood, and this was his experience, that he felt he'd never met a person of this kind of transcendental situation ever. This person, his spiritual master. There's just two more, so we'll go to the next one. And back over here. Again, some volunteer? Okay, cast it over there.
My Gurudeva mercifully told me, reject your knowledge, purity and aristocracy and come close to me. Don't go anywhere else. Whatever you require, as many rooms, houses, palaces and mansions, as much scholarship, skills, self-control and renunciation you will get. Simply come close to me. Let there be a house. Let there be an entrance. Let there be learning. Do not be enamored by this type of thinking. Do not consider as necessities that which ordinary people accept as such.
Mm. So he's actually saying that what most people consider as necessities, just like we know there's always a debate between what you actually need and what are the actual, what are real necessities. Means his moral purity, you know, the idea of what people think is pure if you are strictly moral, truthful. And he's saying this is not very important. For most people, this would be a hard thing to grasp. You know, I'm not interested in your aristocracy, what you think you know, and your so-called purity. Who cares? It's not interesting. I mean, if you think about, because he'd always been lauded as such a great soul, great personality, brilliant leader, a world-renowned, at least India-renowned astrologer and astronomer. He had translated the, or had done some work on the Surya Siddhanta. There's so many. He was considered such a great person. And he's saying, never mind all that stuff. He says, you come close to me. And then he mentions, you want a house, you want a nice entrance, you want to, there be lots of learning. He said, don't even think like that. Don't think that those are the necessities. What's necessary is pure Krishna consciousness. That's what he's saying, in essence. Okay, we have one more. Okay, we'll let you finish up since you kindly invited so many people to come.
I was a fearsome
come on, louder.
I was a fearsome debater, but with great kindness, my Gurudev kicked out my pride in debating. Even in unlimited millions of lifetimes, I'll not be able to find the limit of his compassion, nor will anyone else be able to do so. Although I'm unfit, he recognized me as a servant, thus fulfilling my cherished desire by which I may live forever.
So, this is Bhaktisiddhanta. Now, in a very short time, in September, we're going to have the appearance day of Srila Prabhupada. And we are asked to offer some puja, some written offering in glorification of our spiritual master, since he's everyone's spiritual master as Shiksha Guru of ISKCON. And just see how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the greatest scholar of his day, how he felt. That's the reason I posted all this, how he felt about Gaurakishore and how he viewed his so-called accomplishments, placing himself in an extremely humble position. And he wasn't faking it. So we don't want anybody faking how humble they are. You know the famous story when someone said to Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. He said, you're not the most anything, which was called reality sandwich, a reality sandwich. That comes from Allen Ginsberg. He once said, called one of his poems a reality sandwich. So this is the way that we approach a great Paramahansa like that, by recognizing what is our actual position and what is their position, and trying to praise them in that mood, rather than, oh, I did this and that, the other for you, Prabhupada, or I sometimes we see that at Vyas Puja time, people giving very elaborate talks about how great they were in Prabhupada's service. So we don't want that. We want how great that person is. We want to hear how great he is and what he had done, not how great we were. Oh, I distributed 108 books on that day. And Prabhupada was very pleased with me. And I didn't think I was a great soul, but, you know, that kind of mood we don't want. That's not desiderata. What is that word, desiderata? Not needed. Not needed. So now, I'm going to end there with that. And if there's any questions, or we can go back to any of these that we need to, if you want to ask anything specific. Oh, okay, go ahead. Oh, again, because a lot of people, you know, watch this from home. So that's part of the reason I was so insistent on passing the microphone around. Because, you know, you're sitting at home and the speaker says something like, oh, that was great. That was important what you said. And you know, what did they say? You know, so we want to be able to hear. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the class. I was wondering, Bhaktisiddhanta took sannyas initiation on a picture, which was quite revolutionary, you know, like not really somebody else did it before him, so he didn't really follow in the footsteps of some other previous acharyas to do that. And then we reply to that, yeah, but you know, this was, you know, he's extraordinary, he's Paramahamsa, he can do whatever he wants. But on the point of Bhaktisiddhanta, like if I see how humble he is, like I'm thinking like a humble personality, how could he actually think about taking a sannyas in front of a picture if nobody else did that? Like, you know, like it requires a lot of revolutionary thinking to be able to do that And I was wondering, like, if you could explain that.
Maybe not. But these great personalities, they make decisions according to time, place, and circumstance. His spiritual master was Gaur Kishore, and he had already passed away. And he didn't want to take sannyas. He wanted to take a lower, and I know it sounds strange, but to take sannyas was considered a lower position than Babaji Vaish. So he wanted to take that was his humble position, that he was. And yes, it may be that nobody took sannyas from a picture, and we don't recommend it. If you're on the level of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, a self-realized Paramahansa soul, then, you know, you can make decisions which may be unprecedented. It's not impossible. I mean, Prabhupada made so many adjustments. Bhaktisiddhanta made so many adjustments. You know, for instance, wearing sewn cloth. Sannyasis don't do that. Riding in motor car. Oh, my gosh. No, you have to go by oxen cart. You know, there were so many, what do they call that? Not rules exactly, but so many traditions, you could say. Conventions. There's so many. You're not supposed to cross the ocean if you're a sannyasi. He was prepared to do anything to spread Krishna consciousness. So I think, although it's unprecedented, he knew he already had the blessings of Gaur Kishore. So it was, you can say it was symbolic, or it was unusual, yeah. But, I mean, just like when Prabhupada came, he did a lot of unusual things. For instance, the ashram, I don't know if you're in it, but Brahmacharini ashram, nobody had ever heard of such a thing before. A Brahmacharini ashram. Giving a Brahmin thread to women, that wasn't done either, according to convention. So I think you have to be on a certain level of realization to be able to make these kind of adjustments. Sometimes people want to make adjustments without the necessary adhikar, without the necessary qualification. But in this case, he did have the qualification to make such an adjustment. So I think we can accept that it was the right thing to do. Yeah, anything else? Yeah. Oh, by the way, I know that I don't want to be one of those people that goes way over their time limit. What time are we supposed to be done already? 9 o'clock, really? Well, we'll see how it goes.
Hare Krishna. So you showed a quote in which Srila Bhaktivinoda Sarai Thakur was saying that Gaur Kishore Swamiji did not pay any attention to his scholarship, his purity, and so-called good qualities. So what I figured out that there can be two cases. If a person A is not valuing person B's good qualities, there are two possibilities. Person A is either self-realized or person A is envious. So how do we figure out which category is the other person lying in? If he's self-realized, we would like to have his association. If he's envious, we would not like to have his association, right?
So if I understand your question correctly, you're saying, was Gaur Kishore's judgment of Bhaktisiddhanta's morality and so-called good qualities, how do we know whether that was envy or whether it was...
No, in Gaur Kishore Babaji's case, it was definitely out of his self, means extent of, means very high level of devotional service.
Yes.
But... in general case, let's say if I go to some other person and he's not valuing such things in me, so it can be either of the two cases. Either he's envious or he's too exalted.
It's better to, I would say, to err on the side of assuming they're greater than you. Then you may get some benefit. If you think, oh, this is just an envious rascal, I'm not listening to them. If you see what I'm saying, in other words, it's better to err. If you're going to make a mistake, make a mistake on the side of humility rather than assuming they're just an envious fool. I mean, how does that help you? Oh, this person's correcting me. He must be an envious fool. No.
No, I mean, I slightly disagree over there because in the long run, we might be cheated as well, right? In the long run, We might be cheated as well if we are trusting the wrong person.
Well, you're not trusting them. You're just not arguing about to take the time to argue with them.
Okay.
You're going to accept, you can always accept that you're a fool. That's the proper mood for a disciple. You know, if the disciple's thinking, which some did even in Prabhupada's time, they were thinking, oh, Prabhupada's made some mistakes. I will take initiation in another sampradaya and I will be in a better position. And I'm not going to name any names, but there were a few people that did things like that. But that's not the right state of consciousness. We should accept ourselves as foolish. Bhaktisiddhanta accepted himself that way. I think, you know, if you really want to get down to it, humility is reality. If you're proud, if you're puffed up, if you're arrogant, that means you're not in touch with reality. You know, if someone's very arrogant about their wonderful social or educational scholarly position, and they're very, you know, I have a PhD from Oxford. Do you realize that? And that makes me somebody you should listen to. Well, no. I'm not going to listen to you. You're a fool. I'm not going to say they're a fool. I'm just not going to listen to them. So, you know, humility is, in a sense, and reality are very closely tied together. It's not realistic to think you're something great. If you analyze how many births and why are you still in the material world, how many births you must have had, how many sins you must have committed to get the kind of karmic reactions you've had throughout your life. Now you have a chance to get out and you're going to become proud and puffed up. Ooh, big mistake. Anything else? Yeah, Govinda, please. Are you going to correct me about anything? Because I'm getting scared now.
Thank you. One of the quotes is quite interesting. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati saying, I don't think anyone equal...
They can't hear you.
I don't think anyone equal to Gorga Shord as Babaji Maharaj has ever been to this earth or something. So I'm wondering, we've got a whole parampara, like Rupa Goswami, so many chariots. Is he actually thinking that Gorga Shord as Babaji is just better than everyone else? Is that... correct mood or not? I don't know.
Ah, that's a nice question. For him, yes. I would say for him, that was his feeling. But in terms of, Gaur Kishore, in terms of renunciation especially, there are very few that could match Gaur Kishore. He used to eat whatever people gave him, or he would take some rice and just soak it in water and eat that, or he would actually eat the mud of the Ganges or the Jamuna if there was nothing available. He used to get his cloth from the crematorium grounds, the cloth that he wear, cloth that nobody else wanted because it had been used in a crematorium ceremony. He didn't, you know, that level of renunciation and also his level of realization without a background in scholarship, but yet anybody that asked him a question would get this brilliant answer. Let me tell this one story that I think is hilarious. It's kind of funny. Bhaktisiddhanta had a disciple, and this was when he was young. He hadn't taken sannyas yet, and this disciple came and said, well, I've gotten married. I've become married. He said, so what are my chances for advancing in Krishna consciousness? And Bhaktisiddhanta, in essence, said, well, not much. So this person was very unhappy to hear this. But Bhaktisiddhanta could see that he was really disappointed. So he said, but anyway, let's go and speak to my spiritual master, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, and see what he has to say. And so they went to see Gaur Kishore. And Gorkha said, oh, he's married. Very nice. He said, there's no obstacle. He said, he was pointing to the man. He said, you will gather foodstuffs. You will cook them. And then he said, you will offer them then to your wife. You will feed your wife. And this way, recognizing her as a Vaishnavi, as a servant of God, you will become her servant. In this way, there will be no obstruction. So, so any of you who are married, you just remember, you're supposed to serve your wife as a devotee of Krishna. Because, you know, in that way, there is no obstruction of attachment and thinking that, oh, this person is my servant. No, you're their servant. So if you keep that mentality of being a servant, whether you're married or not married, then you can make progress in Krishna consciousness. So I didn't really answer your question. I'm sorry. I kind of. What do they call that when in England? They say if you kind of obfuscation. No. Anyway, no. I'm just saying that I think that was his mood towards his spiritual master, that he was the servant of the greatest renunciate of the day. But I don't think he'd have a different mood, say, to Jagannath Das Babaji or to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. By the way, Jagannath Das Babaji is also in the book. There's interesting about him. One is that he invented the Panchatattva mantra, Jagannath Das Babaji, and also he lived at the same time as Baladeva Vidyabhushana. He was a young, very young man at the time, but it was during the lifetime of Baladeva Vidyabhushana that he became a devotee. Somewhere in around the middle of the 18th century, and he lived to be, there are different sources. One say that Jagannath Babaji lived to be 147 years old, and another one says 135, 12 years difference. Yeah, okay. I think I'm almost over my time, not yet, but okay. Uh-oh, I'm going to get stumped again, aren't I?
Following on the story that you just mentioned.
Well, you do that, right? You're very much in a mood of service towards your wife, right? Aren't you?
I don't know.
Oh, come on. Where is she? Is she here? No. He is, isn't he? He's your... Go ahead. Sorry.
First of all, nice, very nice, inspiring class. But the last story that you just mentioned, you said that I was wondering where you got that story from, because you mentioned that the disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, went to him about his Grihastha,
yeah,
you know, intention. And then he said, let's go to my spiritual master, and then we will ask him, was he accepting disciples in the presence of his guru,
yeah,
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta? Was it an exception, or was it Ritvik?
No, he was taking disciples, yeah.
In the presence of his guru?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a presidencia that could go on in
his life. Well, we've done it in our society. Kadambakanana Maharaj took disciples. He was a disciple, at least theoretically, of, and I don't think it's theoretical, but he was a disciple of who? Jayadvaita Maharaj. So it can be done. It's not the usual thing, but again, it can be done.
Okay. I didn't want to go into
and as far
this,
as the source of the thing, these are all stories that were told by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati himself, and were compiled into a book by his followers, and was translated some years back into English. And I've done so much. I've just finished this book.
No, it was good. The story
and
was good.
So much more research done for this version of Babaji Maharaj. If anybody's read the previous one, there were no footnotes. There was no, you know. But this time, it's really well researched and. It'll be coming out, I hope, in the next 6 months or so. Called Babaji Maharaj. I'm doing a plug for my book. That's what I'm doing a plug. Yeah, I know. I'm not that.
By the way, the word desiderata, that's Latin word. It means very much wanted. Yeah, you
can. Yeah, I'm just another hypocrite. Okay, we got one here and one there. Any over? Did I miss any? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. It's kind of related to Govinda's question, actually. We often say that Srila Prabhupada is the greatest acharya that has ever walked the earth. So is it correct to say that one acharya can be greater than another? Or is that kind of, not hyperbole, but, you know,
I think it's
correct glorification?
I think it's transcendental hyperbole.
Transcendental hyperbole, okay.
Yeah,
is
in other words,
like perfect or like more perfect?
When Prabhupada was traveling, he used to say, oh, I see that your temple is the best. He said that in so many temples. Was it a lie? No, but it was a kind of encouragement. It was, I think that when we speak like that, it's not like Bhaktisiddhanta is saying Gorkha Shore is the greatest, and Rupa Goswami, well, no, not at all. And if you would say it was Rupa Goswami the greatest, yes, definitely. I think it's just a question of a loving sentiment that, you know, for your spiritual master. We feel that way about Prabhupada. Why? There's so much evidence. But someone else may say, no, for me it was Bhaktisiddhanta's. I mean, not us, but I mean his Bhaktisiddhanta's followers might say, no, it's Bhaktisiddhanta. In their hearts, that's who they felt was the greatest. So I think that that's a natural sentiment for the disciple to think, my guru. I mean, sometimes it gets kind of goes the wrong way. You know, I remember earlier days in ISKCON where, oh, he's a disciple of that guru. Ooh. You know, that's no good. Not very nice. It's a natural sentiment for a disciple to think his guru is great. So I don't think there's any harm in this. Okay, we've got one there and one over here. Okay, he was first, though. Sorry, he was first. The Brahmacharya by the bell. I don't know your name. What's your name? What?
He's very quiet, but he's very learned.
Okay.
Deva Simadas. My name is Devasima Das. I have a question in regards to Prabhu's question. Gaur Krishna Das Sabaji Maharaj passed away, and that's why, I mean, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took sannyas from the picture. So, and then you said that he was accepting disciples in the presence of his Guru Maharaj. So,
yeah.
So then he was accepting disciples before taking sannyas also.
Yeah. Yeah. Initially, the first few disciples were prior to sannyas. Yeah. Yeah.
Was he a Babaji?
No. No.
Before sannyas?
No.
Brahmachari.
Just a Brahmachari. You know, when Gorkhasura passed away, these people were trying to claim the bodies and create a samadhi because they wanted to get the income that will come from them establishing the samadhi of Gorkhasura. And they actually, Gorkhasura had once made a very humble statement, say that when I pass away, I want them to tie a rope around my feet and drag me through the streets of Navadvip. So they were actually going to do that. And Bhaktisiddhanta showed up and said, no way, I'm carrying my Gurudev on my head. You're not going to do any such thing. And there's a big argument. So what do they call that? The chief police guy, what are they? Superintendent of police? SP, yeah. Came and he was trying to adjudicate the whole matter. And there was a big hubbub. And then Bhaktisiddhanta said, well, if any one of you that are here that want to take the body of Gorkhasura, I will relinquish it. If in the last 1 year, 6 months, I don't remember all the 3 months, 1 month, or even the last few days, has not had illicit sex, then you can take the body. And they all left. Well, no, the superintendent first said, well, how will you get the proof of this? And he said, I will accept their word. And just imagine how powerful a person Bhaktisiddhanta must have been that he could just look at them and say, I will accept their word. And they all left. So he was able to. One more. Was there a question? All right, ask your question, and we have about 1 minute.
Hi. How does one know that they have found the right guru?
Only you will know. Only you will know. If you think, I'm ready to serve this person with my life and soul. No one can dictate that for you. That has to come from you. I think that's the only answer I could give you. I can't say, oh, no, well, you should take initiation from so-and-so. No, it has to be from your conviction. One more question over on the other side. Oh, okay. Vyojana Prabhu.
I'm just thinking of the quotation from the Bible. It was when they were stoning this woman who'd been with somebody's husband.
They were stoning, you said?
In the Bible, there's a parable. It's in Jesus. He said that they were stoning this person, a lady who'd been with somebody else's husband.
Yeah.
And she was like a prostitute or something. And he said, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. And they all walked away. None of them could say.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a small reflection before, don't worry, it's not a question. If he, the disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, they would have succeeded here in London. I was just thinking now, we would have been Gaudiya Math, yeah. Not ISKCON. Is it correct?
Well, they came back, you know, and weren't able to do. Oh, I read one really interesting story, and I don't know if you've seen Mula Prakriti's book. What is it? Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All, something like that. And this one of Prabhupada's godbrothers was at an assembly just after all the preachers had returned from Europe, from London and Europe. Some of them had gone to Germany. They'd been to a few places, but they hadn't been able to do much of anything. So they came back, and he was a little disappointed. So he was speaking to a large assembly of devotees, and the person who witnessed this event said that he first looked at all his sannyasi disciples when he was talking about, we want to spread Krishna consciousness to the West. We must do this. And so he was looking at them initially, and then he looked over to the left and was looking at someone in the crowd, making eye contact with someone. And this devotee said he was trying to figure out who was he looking at. And then he saw he and Prabhupada, at that time Bhaktivedanta Swami, were locked in a gaze with each other. And he was saying, I will say that one of my disciples will go to the West and they will bring back the whole world. And he was looking at Prabhupada when he said it, and Prabhupada apparently nodded his head. So, whether that's, who knows whether that's a made-up story, but as far as I know, he was swearing it was true. So, yeah. So we didn't become Gaudiya Math, we became some kind of strange hybrid, but, yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. How can we deal with this? How can we deal with this this self-deceit of that we are great? Like, I mean, this is an illusion, isn't it? But it's kind of, what's your thought on that?
How to deal with a false conception of the self? Other than chanting Hare Krishna and rendering service and taking prasadam, I don't know if there's any easy answer to that. I think if you just try to be realistic, I mean, truly realistic. I mean, what were we before we came to this movement? What were we up to? What were we doing? How were we behaving? And a few years on, how far along are we? Usually the answer is not very far. One thing is, I don't accept this idea of fake it until you make it. You know, be real about where you're at. Don't try to get prestige and a sense of importance. by kind of self-glorification or letting others falsely glorify you. And that's something I really wish we could give up in this movement, is falsely glorifying others. Be real about it. And if you're going to say something sincere, then the person who hears that sincerity will become humble, like most of the time. And if it's false, then they'll either become irritated or they'll become puffed up, neither of which we want. So just be real. Be honest. There's a quote by Bob Dylan. I'll conclude with Bob Dylan then. He says, to live outside the law, or my translation, to be transcendental, to live outside the law, you must be honest. That was his quote. So, and I think, hear that quote, I think, to become a transcendental personality, be honest to start with. You know, don't be faking anything. Just be who you are. We try so hard sometimes to be what we think others want us to be. Rather than, you know, what is that famous Oscar Wilde quote? He says, be yourself, everyone else is taken. I like that quote. Be yourself, everyone else is taken. You know, just be honest, be sincere. Other than that, you know where you're at probably better than anyone. So if you're honest about it, what if someone thinks, oh, they're so humble? Like, oh, that's here's a difficult person to be around. They're humble. Oh. No, it's nice to be around people that are humble, that are not engaged in self-glorification or, you know. And we have a lot of good examples of that in this temple. So find out who they are and be like them. I always think of Prayojana whenever I think of this temple. Someone that's been in a very humble position doing service for a long time. That's impressive. I find that impressive. I'd like to be more like him. And that's what Prabhupada told me when I was a teacher in Gurukul many years ago. I said, the students don't like to listen to when we instruct them. They don't like to listen to what we say. What should I do? He said, you just tell them, you see so-and-so, how they're doing something very nicely? He said, you should do like them and you'll become happy. So at the time I was thinking, that's it? But it actually works. If someone's behaving nicely, who has the respect of others, and you say, look, this person's done something wonderful, you know, why don't you follow their example and become happy? It actually works, but it sounds oversimplistic. But, you know, I tried to put it into practice. Generally, it worked. Mostly. Okay, I think I've gone over time. I'm going to stop here. Thank you all very much for staying and for being such an attentive audience. Hare Krishna.